taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me. Today should be a good show because, well, today I'm bringing you some good news. I know, I'm often showing up with doom and gloom and look at what this person's doing wrong and look at this Constitution. Well, today I'm starting out with some good news. Now, I'm not going to say the whole thing's going to be good news, but we're going to start out with some good news. Now, by now, I am sure you have heard of this thing called the Omicron variant of COVID-19, or the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And, of course, this has been has been top of the news in a lot of places. It's a great big deal. Well, I have some good news. As of this recording, in fact, as of last week, the WHO says there are still no known deaths from Omicron globally. That's right. Around the world, no deaths have been reported from Omicron. Why? Because it's been reported to be a relatively mild variant of the COVID-19. Now, this was first brought up through a South African doctor, and according to an AP report, they spoke to several South African doctors, and as the Omicron, quoting from them, as the Omicron variant sweeps through South Africa, Dr. Ubin Pillay is seeing dozens of sick patients a day, yet hasn't had to send one to the hospital. Doctor says they are able to manage the disease at home. Most have recovered within the 10 to 14 day isolation period. And that includes older patients and those with health problems. That's important because, well, some people were saying Omicron so far, we've only seen it in the strong and the young and those who, you know, so when it gets to the old people, well, that's even in old people. So Omicron is mild. This is good news. And in fact, the widespread of this could be really good news because if Omicron, if catching the Omicron variant of COVID gives you a broad spectrum immunity to COVID as a whole, what better way to get to herd immunity than to let people get Omicron? If it only makes them sick for a few days, it's not life-threatening. It doesn't require, in most cases, hospitalization. Right? This is good news. The fact that Omicron is not deadly. In fact, the CDC says that most Omicron infections are mild. This is according to Director Walensky. The disease is mild. Now, we still have a lot of people catching Delta, and there's a lot I want to talk about, but I want to focus. Omicron. Omicron is mild. Omicron appears to be nothing to be afraid of. Not that it won't be used as an excuse for tyrants to take more control, but understand, the good news is Omicron appears to be mild. Mild enough that it's not caused a single death yet, and at least as of this recording, and in many cases, not even requiring hospitalization. But there's more good news. Do you remember Dr. Carson, Dr. Ben Carson? Well, he was being interviewed on Maria Bartiromo's Fox News program, and he mentioned something that really should be followed up with. He said, we should research why there is a correlation between tropical nations, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and low COVID mortality. He says, yeah, there's a correlation. Now, again, correlation doesn't mean causation, but when we've got tropical nations, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and a low COVID mortality correlation, that's really something we should look at. In other words, could there possibly be a treatment, an effective treatment, a treatment that has been known for years, in some cases decades, to be safe for human consumption that could lead to lower COVID mortality rates rather than the experimental mRNA what they call vaccines, the gene therapy. I don't know. To me, this is good news. If there is a correlation, if a doctor, especially one of Dr. Carson's status, says there appears to be a correlation, we should investigate this. I wholeheartedly agree. We should investigate this because it may be that the emergency that they use to justify the emergency use authorization is not an emergency at all. It probably never has been. But let's find out. Let's actually Purdue science. Let's actually, there's a hypothesis, there's a correlation. Let's do some scientific analysis and see, well, if that is that true? Now let's look at some more good news. Only this time we're getting into good news that isn't really as good as it first sounds. Remember, I tell you, you know, never trust the headline, trust but verify. So I've seen these headlines popping up. Senate blocks Biden's vaccine mandate for private businesses. And there was much rejoicing and cheers went up all around the country, except for one itty bitty little thing. See, the vote was 52-40. It was a close vote in the Senate, and it was mostly apparently along party lines. But what did the Senate vote? What did they vote for? First of all, the Senate voted. Doesn't mean it's law. Doesn't mean that there's anything there. No. They didn't even pass a bill. They passed a resolution of disapproval. So we're not talking about a law. We're not talking about a one branch of government holding the other accountable. We're simply have the Senate going, tis, 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 Mr. Biden. We don't approve of what you're doing. So I'm glad to see that 52 senators agree, and I'm not surprised that 48 disagreed. But really, some of the hype I see about, oh, they voted to repeal the executive mandate. No, they did not. They voted to wag their finger at President Biden and his administration. Now, I'll take the finger wag. Right? I'll take the good news while we can get it, but let's not hype this into something this is not. This is not the Senate standing up and telling the president, I'm sorry, Mr. President, you've gone too far and we will not allow this to happen. The states, the Senate, as a representative of the states have turned their back, you know, the states saying no, not yet. Now, maybe this is a first step. Maybe the joint resolution was a test. See how much support they could get, and they may follow that up with a law. That may be. As I said, I'll take what good news I can. In this case, that the Senate did wag their finger at the president. But let's face it, the House hasn't done anything to do this. And even if both the House and the Senate pass it, it legally apparently means nothing, because all they're saying is, we disapprove. Now, that's been the good news. Unfortunately, there's going to be some bad news. It's just kind of the nature of life nowadays, right? You got the good news. Well, there's going to be some bad news. But let's talk about some of this. I read this report, which is kind of interesting, about the Supreme Court's record on protecting civil rights during this recent scamdemic. In this article at the Epoch Times, apparently they speak to several legal experts, and they said the overall understanding is generally the court did a good job safeguarding religious freedoms. And they use as examples striking down limits on church capacity or blocking New York State's enforcement of restrictions on attendance in places of worship. They talked about that. They did say they fell short on mask and vaccine mandates. So they said, okay, you can worship, but we're going to allow these unconstitutional mask and vaccine mandates to pass our approval. According to one of the experts, Stephen Allen, he said, I've experienced some disappointment that the Supreme Court didn't move more quickly to strike down some of the efforts by the Biden administration and by state and local authorities to deprive people of their rights using the Wuhan coronavirus as a pretext. He said that the Supreme Court has been encouraging lawlessness by acting slowly or failing to act. He said, the high court should always move quickly to slap down unconstitutional power grabs. So I agree. And he made the point that, you know, by taking so long, by the time the court gets around to it, the damage is done. But let's face it, the Supreme Court is not designed to be that instant response. If you're expecting, see, by putting all of our eggs in the basket of the Supreme Court, we're stuck with the fact that it's a slow and lethargic process to get something seen and reviewed by the court. But then again, the court isn't the supreme law of the land, so why are we waiting on them anyway? But that's a whole other thing. But the good news is the court has done some good, some bad. It's a mixed bag. It's not all bad. But then again, when it comes to our rights, it's not all good either. For example, last week, there were a couple of lawsuits that were requests for lawsuits, emergency requests made to the Supreme Court. One by a Florida man, Michael Seklecki, and another, Lucas Wall. And what they're trying to do is get the court to opine on the mask mandate on planes. They specifically filed their lawsuits against the Transportation Security Administration, which is the one enforcing the mask mandates. Now, they claim that the TSA has produced no evidence showing that face masks are effective tools at reducing the spread of COVID-19. So this went to the Supreme Court, and because of where they're filed, it landed on the desk of Chief Justice Roberts, who summarily rejected the request without comment. Didn't say why, just said, nope, you're not going to allow these lawsuits. Which is why it takes so long for a case to get to the Supreme Court, right? Because there's these shortcut venues don't work very well. So the good news is we do have people that are still fighting. These cases are still working their way through the courts. It's just that they're not going to get their shortcut review going right to the Supreme Court because Chief Justice Roberts said so. And I still wonder why people consider him a conservative, or at least a constitutional justice. He's shown very little of that in his tenure. But as you can probably tell, the good news is waning and the bad news is fast approaching. I bring another lawsuit dealt with by a federal judge, this time involving my new home state of Tennessee. See, federal judge Waverly Crenshaw blocked, or quote-unquote blocked, the implementation of a Tennessee law that bans mask mandates in school. So the Tennessee General Assembly passed a law that said schools cannot implement mask mandates. And this judge said, well, Tennessee's Department of Education does not have the authority to enforce the ban because of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Now, understand, I've dealt with this logic before, but let me cover it again briefly. According to those claim that the ADA requires mask mandates, or prevents bans on mask mandates, is the logic that says if any person in a school could possibly be impacted by people not wearing masks, the entire school must be masked because they have a disability. So everybody else has to lose their rights because one person with a disability basically overrules everything. Now, again, I understand the desire to make accommodations for people with disabilities. I agree. My wife has a disability. I don't have a problem with that. I think the Americans with Disability Act is unconstitutional because it's not the federal government that should be dealing with this. But you're telling me that I'm trying to figure out where the Americans with Disability Act says that schools cannot do anything that could possibly adversely impact a disabled person, is willing to, is in fact required to disenfranchise, to infringe on the rights of the vast majority of students because a student's parents think there's a problem. And that's the part that drives me nuts. Now, here's the interesting part. They say in the article, this one came from the Tennessee Star, that he blocked. He didn't block anything. You see, a federal judge doesn't have the legal authority to tell the state of Tennessee no. They can't enforce it. So as far as I'm concerned, the Governor Lee should say, Tennessee Department of Education, you go right ahead. This is a Tennessee law, and the Americans with Disabilities Act that you're claiming, you're using to violate the rights of the parents and the children of the vast majority of the students in the state of Tennessee. The Constitution trumps federal Judge Crenshaw. Period. It does. So he's got all the justification to tell the Department of Education, ignore that that quote-unquote injunction. It's not valid because the Americans with Disabilities Act is not constitutional. But even more, you are violating, this judge is using this federal law to violate the rights of the majority of the students and their parents in the school system of Tennessee. Now, sadly, I'm going to get in some really, well, some bad news. Let me start out with the lesser of the two articles I want to deal with some bad news. See, there was a Mississippi doctor who claims he was fired for attempting to treat a COVID-19 patient. Now, the treatment he wanted to use was ivermectin. Now, this is approved by the FDA for human use. It's used to treat parasites. But you see, the hospital says, well, you see, he wasn't fired because he wasn't an employee. He was an independent contractor. Now, here's the story, and I'm getting this again from the Epic Times. See, Dr. John Witcher is an emergency room physician at Baptist Memorial in Yazoo City. And he was told that he couldn't come back after taking several COVID-19 patients off of remdesivir, which is approved by the FDA to treat the virus, the COVID-19 virus, and allowed them to use ivermectin. Now, I want to back up a second because there's a couple important things to understand here. This is a doctor making a medical decision. Now, ivermectin has not only been used in humans, it won a Nobel Prize. But you may be wondering, what does treating parasites have to do with the COVID virus? Well, it's interesting. See, the way it was explained to me by several doctors is the ivermectin itself doesn't treat COVID. What the ivermectin does is it allows the zinc in your body to enter the cells to stop the reproduction of the COVID virus. That's what is explained to me. Now, again, I'm not a doctor. I've heard this from multiple doctors, though. The way things like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine work is that they make the zinc effective. They allow the zinc to get to where it can do its job. And if you stop the replication of the virus, you take the virus load down, the body can then recover. That's the design. Now, compare that with remdesivir. Now, I'm not familiar with remdesivir. Again, I'm not a doctor, but I've done a little bit of research. See, remdesivir was originally tested to treat the Ebola virus. So they ran a test. They had several. I think they had like four different things they were using, and remdesivir was one of them. They pulled remdesivir from the study because it had a greater than 50% fatality rate. In other words, if you were in the study group and you were one of the patients that got remdesivir, you died more than half the time you were going to die. Greater than, apparently, I guess, the control group. So they pulled it. Now, from that standpoint, that makes me very questionable about remdesivir. Why would I take a drug whose was pulled from its previous study due to a high mortality rate and replace it with a drug that has not only a low mortality rate, it has a long history of safe use in humans and apparently can be effective in treating COVID along with with things like vitamin C, zinc, and other things. See, to me, this is a medical decision made by a medical doctor and I'm assuming in consultation with the patient. Dr. Witcher says that the patients were under his direct care and he thought that taking them off remdesivir, putting them on ivermectin was the right thing to do at the time. But Baptist Memorial says he no longer practices medicine at their Yazoo City facility. The hospital said that the standards of care recommended by the scientific community and our medical team in the prevention and treatment of COVID-19 are what they follow. In other words, they'll more than have to give vaccines and monoclonal antibodies. But the problem is the vaccines have been shown not to be effective. Monoclonal, at least not effective at stopping the spread of the disease. It does seem to help prevent the disease getting really bad. That's the one thing that the mRNA based vaccines do, is it seems to keep the disease from getting really bad if it's taken beforehand, but that wanes. But here you have a hospital, and I love the way they say the scientific community and their medical team. Well, what they're saying is the government, right? It's the CDC that's recommending this treatment. So you have a treatment. Remdesivir kills people. You have ivermectin, which doesn't. You have remdesivir, which has shown some effectiveness. You have monoclonal antibodies, which has shown some effectiveness. But again, these are treatments without long-term studies, so we don't know the long-term impact. Does the body become dependent on these monoclonal antibodies? In other words, do the monoclonal antibodies actually cure the disease, or do they simply help the body defend against the symptoms until the body antibodies wear out? We don't know yet. Yet again, remember, all the way back, we were talking about Dr. Carson. There are studies that correlate things like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, with low COVID mortality rates. See, if we're listening to the scientific community, what about the scientific community that says this stuff works? This stuff has been used safely for years and decades. Some of this stuff won a Nobel Prize. So let's take the decision out of the hands of the doctor that's sitting in front of you, that's treating you, that knows what's going on right now, and put it in the hands of a bunch of bureaucrats. They may be bureaucrats with medical degrees, but they are simply bureaucrats. Why in God's name? How did we get here? Do you know how we got here? Trace it all. You can push it back to the Affordable Care Act. Let's make medicine federalized as much as possible. Let's put the federal government decide what the standards are for care. Let's take the CDC and the Affordable Care Act and push a socialized style medicine, even if it's not a single payer. In fact, let's push all the way back to Medicaid and Medicare and have the federal government determine the standards of treatment rather than your doctor. Now, what happens when we let bureaucracies make medical decisions? Sadly, people die. See, I found this story. This one came out of the Epoch Times, and it is a sad story. Colleen DeLuca died back on October 10th at age 62 of COVID. You say, well, okay, that's sad. What does this have to do with? Well, you see, her husband, David, had ivermectin. He had gotten a prescription for ivermectin by an out-of-state doctor for his wife. And he believed that it would save her life, but he was not allowed to have it administered. Now, again, ivermectin has been shown to help in many cases, all across the country, all across the world. But you see, in the United States, hospitals don't include it in their COVID protocol. Hospitals, even as a last-ditch effort for a dying patient. So here you have David DeLuca. He has a possible treatment for his wife. His wife is dying, even as a last-ditch effort. The hospital wouldn't allow it. According to Mr. DeLuca, he says, they kept telling me the magistrates of New Jersey will never let this go through. The magistrates of New Jersey were making medical decisions. And now, this man must spend the rest of his life without his wife. Any grandchildren? He's got a 3-year-old granddaughter. Won't grow up with her grandmother. Now, would ivermectin have saved her life? We will never know. Right? You cannot prove a negative. But what does it say about America that we have politicians, bureaucrats, and judges making medical decisions in contradiction to the medical doctors treating the patient? We warned and we warned and we warned. If you put the government in charge of making life and death medical decisions, people will die. Okay, maybe they're not death panels, but what else would you call the CDC when they say, don't use ivermectin, even though it's been shown to be useful? Even as a last-ditch effort, refuse treatment because a bureaucrat said so. Ladies and gentlemen, I feel for Mr. DeLuca, and I feel for his whole family. I'm heartbroken to have any family die, any family member die. But it breaks my heart that America has fallen to the point where you can't get treatment because a bureaucrat has said no. Where you can't make medical decisions for yourself anymore, even in consultation with a physician, because a bureaucrat has said no. I know I started out with good news, but I'm about to head into the break, but I got to leave you with the bad news. The bad news is Mrs. DeLuca is not the only one. And unless we do something, she will not be the last. Now, as I said, I'm heading into break, so please do me a favor, head over to constitutionstudy.com. You can find out more about the work that we're doing here, and by all means, ask a question. I'm still looking for questions for another Q&A segment. I loved the last one that we did, so go to constitutionstudy.com/questions, fill out the form, just check the box that says you want me to answer it on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'll be more than happy to add it to the queue. Also, since we're talking about treating COVID, the best thing you can do is live a healthy life. Make sure your body gets the nutrition that it needs. Therefore, please check out HealthyCell.com. Their vitamins work at the cellular level to do things like boost your immune system, help you sleep better, help you focus more. Now, you can try their immune super boost. It's what I use, what my family use, to help make sure that we don't get sick with COVID or the flu or anything else. As an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So again, try any of their products. Try the REM sleep or the focus and recall. But take a look at the immune super boost. Talk it over with your physician. Try it as a way to keep your body healthy, to get the what your body needs to fight off these diseases. And don't forget to use the code OUTLOUD at checkout to get 20% off your first order.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com. HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutloud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. We're talking about, well, good news and bad news. We had some good news in the beginning. We had some bad news at the break. Now I want to kind of get some, well, I guess it's just news. It's information. Information that you can use. See, the Centers for Disease Control, the infamous CDC, released a study based on hospitalized veterans. They looked at the responsiveness of the mRNA vaccines. In other words, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. Now, they call them vaccines. I don't call them vaccines because they don't meet the legal definition of a vaccine. They're actually gene therapy. But I'm reporting based on what the Centers for Disease Control study found. At least they backed the study and they published it. And what they found is that both Pfizer and Moderna vaccines effectively prevent hospitalization from veterans for about 4 months after they got their second dose. And then it declined. Moderna declined 86%. Pfizer declined 75%. So this, I guess, would explain the repeated calls for booster shots. Because these quote-unquote vaccines, these gene therapies, are not a fix. They're a Band-Aid. It's looking at the problem and say, let's fix the short term, but we're ignoring the long term situation. And again, what it's finding is that it prevents hospitalization. No, it doesn't say anything about infection rates. This was studying the number of people who were hospitalized. So I guess that's what, a partial temporary victory for a treatment that's never been used broadly in the human population before? That's your decision. If you wish to try it, if you make a decision with your doctor that that is the best process, that's the best way to move forward, go for it. I don't have a problem with that. I have a tremendous problem, though, with government actors claiming they have the authority to tell someone they must be a guinea pig for a quote-unquote vaccine that doesn't prevent infection and that has waning effectiveness. See, this is one of the biggest problems we have when we put the decision-making process in the hands of a few people. We get target locked. It's like, okay, this becomes the only solution, and we start ignoring other things that could be solutions, but we don't know. See, one of the beauties of liberty is the ability to try different things. See, not everybody is the same. So when you try a one-size-fits-all solution, well, it rarely fits anybody. But you see, that's what we've done. And this is just more data that shows what we're being told. It isn't as effective as we've been told. And if there's a perfect example of that, it has to be the National Basketball Association, the NBA. Now, the NBA has been whole hog into attacking this pandemic. They have a 97% vaccination rate. 97% of, as I understand it, players, team members, and staff are vaccinated. But you see, there's an outbreak of coronavirus running through the league. Even with a 60% rate of booster shots in players, many teams have had to sideline them due to coronavirus infection. And again, this is the problem. You've got a one-size-fits-all, and we're being told it's safe and effective without the long-term studies. You see, the league was one of the first leagues to cease operations when coronavirus flared up in the U.S. They went through, remember, they had the Florida bubble. Players were not allowed to even practice in Florida because of how Florida was dealing with the disease. They would not allow unvaccinated Kyrie Irving to play or even to practice. See, they claim to be at the forefront of how professional sports handle a global pandemic, but the outcome hasn't really worked as well as it has it. See, that's called a study. Or at least it's an opportunity for a study. You have data. Now, again, am I saying that vaccination is the wrong solution? Depends. See, I don't know. What I do know is that these are, at least the players, are healthy. You kind of have to be to play football at that level. But are still getting infected. And they're not being hospitalized, right? That's the other thing we notice is that while there are infections, seven members of the Chicago Bulls have tested positive, four from the Charlotte Hornets, three from the Denver Nuggets. We're not seeing them being hospitalized, are we? We're not hearing about them dying, are we? So it begs the question, is the forced vaccination of athletes the proper solution? And I ask this for two reasons, right? One is it the right move for the athlete to introduce a substance to their body without long-term testing? They're athletes. Who knows what it's going to do to their bodies? But the other part is, okay, if this truly is the global emergency we've been told it is, think of the vaccines that have been used for athletes that may have gone to those who truly are at greater risk. The elderly, the ones with certain comorbidities. We've diverted vaccines from those who possibly couldn't, that are more likely to need it, to those who are least likely to need it. Not just athletes, children. Remember, we've now said it's okay to vax, and they're pushing vaccinating children as young as five. The ones that have almost no chance of dying, very small chance of hospitalization. This whole thing kind of, well, I guess it doesn't make any sense to me. And now the CDC has come out with a new interesting statistic. Now, the Omicron variant has been detected in at least 19 U.S. states. Oh, my God, 19 states, we've got Omicron, we're all going to die. Well, except 43 people in 19 states, at least according to this one study, have tested positive for the Omicron variant. Three-quarters of those states have been people who are fully vaccinated. Yeah, so all those people that said, Omicron is coming, you got to get vaccinated, doesn't seem to have worked that well, has it? Now, an updated report, I guess as of December 11th, 29 states have reported 110 cases of Omicron. 110 cases out of 330 million people, we have 110 cases. Apparently, 52 of those were fully vaccinated. Some of them had even gotten the booster shot. So again, this rushing into, we got to do vaccines, that doesn't make sense. It's the bureaucratic mentality of we've all got to do the same thing. No, go to your doctor. Have a frank discussion. And if all they can do is spout Fauci and Walensky, if that's okay with you, fine. I'm just saying you may want to find a doctor that actually looks at studies. Because while they claim this is safe, there are issues. There are risks. There's risks in everything. There's risks in taking the vaccine. There's risks in not taking the vaccine. There's risks in whether or not you get the booster shot. You see, one of the issues they're seeing is myocarditis in young people. Now, according to Dr. Peter McCullough, another person on America Out Loud Radio, I listen to his program. I recommend you do too. But in an interview, he noted that the myocarditis that young people are getting post-vaccine is actually more dangerous than what they're seeing if they get the COVID disease. Now, what is myocarditis? Myocarditis is an inflammation of the heart. The heart muscle gets inflamed, and we're seeing that in a lot of young people, healthy people, who are recently vaccinated. Now, there are, you know, the CDC is, and others are pushing, well, you know, the myocarditis, it's mild. Now, Dr. McCullough, who's proven to be right quite a bit in the recent couple of years, says that's not necessarily true. So, I mean, health officials say it's rare and it's certainly worth the risk, but see, Dr. McCullough notices, well, if you get myocarditis from COVID-19, and I'm not getting into the science of it because I don't entirely understand it, but he says, basically, he refers to it as it's inconsequential. There's a slight inflammation generally to the presence of elevated troponin protein, right? So you get the disease, your body chemistry goes off a little bit, your heart enlarges a little bit, it inflames a little bit, and it's generally easily dealt with. It's also, by the way, seen primarily those people who have a severe COVID reaction, meaning they're in intensive care. Notice you don't see it in the average or mild COVID. You see it in the severe. However, there are preclinical studies that suggest that what they call the lipid nanoparticles from the vaccines, they actually go right to the heart. And when they're in the heart, the body attacks the heart. And there are changes in your EKG. Now, this is different from what happens from a natural infection. Myocarditis from a natural infection is not what you're getting from the vaccine. And it's dangerous. Again, I'm not a doctor. I would certainly recommend you check out the show page for Dr. Peter McCullough on AmericaOutLoud.com. Just go to America Out Loud, search under schedule or under shows, and you'll find his program to find out more. But you see, that's kind of that, if we're talking good news, bad news, the question I have to ask is the cure worse than the disease? Is the vaccine worse than the disease? And again, I'm going to keep falling down to, well, it depends. What are your risk factors? What are your potential? What are the risks one way or the other? And can we make an intelligent decision? Because what we've been getting from the bureaucrats, I'm sorry, they're bureaucrats with medical degrees. These people have given up the concept of medicine. The whole idea of first do no harm seems to be gone. See, when I saw an interview with Dr. Fauci, again, I wouldn't trust anything. I wouldn't trust Dr. Fauci if he told me the sky was blue. But he said he wants people, when family members come over for the holidays, he wants you to ask for proof of vaccine first. Now, I want you to think about that for just a second. Again, first of all, if you have a serious risk factor, right? If you are, 70, 80, 90 years old, maybe you have diabetes or other comorbidities, and it's a real risk, do you need proof of vaccination? Or couldn't you say, listen, we don't want to take a risk with grandma and grandpa. Maybe we should consider that. But to ask for a proof of vaccine, you're telling me that if somebody comes over to your house, a family member comes over to your house, and you say, listen, I want people to be vaccinated before they come to the house because I'm afraid. Now, again, There's no proof that the vaccine prevents the spread of COVID. In other words, if you're vaccinated, you can still get COVID. And if you get COVID, you can still spread COVID. So requiring people to come into your house that are vaccinated doesn't make a lot of sense. But let's say that you're telling me you're not going to trust your family members. You want proof first. What has the American society come to? Now, again, if you have friends or family members and you know they want to take some precautions, whether you think it's reasonable or not, that's, you know, they are allowed to. I went and visited somebody and they didn't want me inside their house. I was out on a patio. I don't think it was necessary, but it was their house. I understood that. But to have Fauci, the very idea that society has crumbled to the point where, A, you can't reason out the logic that if you're vaccinated, you should be protected from it. And that if you're not protected from it, well, then what was the purpose of the vaccine? And B, well, if people being vaccinated can still spread the virus, what do you care? So I keep saying this is not a medical pandemic. This is a political pandemic. And again, it's one of the reasons why I don't trust Dr. Fauci. It's also why when the CDC recommends that 16 and 17-year-olds get the booster shot, after finding out that young people are getting a more severe case of myocarditis from these vaccines, do you want to take a chance again? For a disease you have a low chance of getting, relatively low, a low chance at that age, great, 16 to 17-year-olds, of being hospitalized and an even lower chance of dying, do you want to take the risk? Now, some people, again, they may say yes, because they're afraid or they've talked to their doctor and they have certain medical conditions. And because of those medical conditions, they've decided that's the right thing to do. Fine. But when I look at the CDC recommending something for an age group that is not at risk of COVID, when does that become medical malpractice? I mean, I'm looking at the CDC's own website. This is CDC data. This is not some out of the way. These are the same people that are recommending 16 and 17-year-olds get the booster shot. The case rate, only 2.7% of all cases are age 16 to 17. And it rounds to zero the number of 16 to 17-year-olds who have died. In other words, out of the approximately 1.1 million cases of COVID in 16 and 17-year-olds, 230 have died. Not 230,000, 230. In other words, these are some of the people that have the least chance of dying from COVID. Yet, we're still pushing this stuff. So the good news is there's more data out there for you to make an intelligent decision. The bad news is how many of people are actually making a decision based on data, and how many are simply, well, doing what they're told. You know, I used to teach Sunday school many years ago, and I used to tell my students every year, the most difficult question I will ask you is why. Why do you believe what you believe? Why do you act the way that you do? And I think that's important here as well. Why have you made these decisions? What is the basis for these decisions? Now, in many cases, I believe the basis is intelligent, right? You've talked to your doctor, you've agreed, you've looked at your risk factors one way or the other, you've made an intelligent decision, and you move on with your life. Absolutely fine. I have zero problem with that. If you simply go, I'm afraid and I'm just doing what I'm told, well, that's your choice. I can't turn around and say that you can't. But to me, that's a poorly made decision. Because when we make decisions and we don't look at the consequences, we don't consider the consequences on all sides, and then we don't review those consequences to see whether or not we made a good decision so that we can make a better decision next time, well, you end up with 97% of the NBA being vaccinated, but there's a wave of COVID running through it. Now, these are difficult times, and I won't pretend that they're not. But I do want to wrap up with a little bit of, if not great news, at least good news, at least news to consider. You see, COVID is not as dangerous as we first thought. I know we're being told that it's the end of the world, but it's simply not. COVID is a disease. It hits certain people harder than others, and those people should take extra precautions. The same way that many elderly people get the flu shot every year while many young people don't. There is a treatment that works if we would simply get the bureaucrats out of the way and allow doctors to make decisions based on the patient and the patient's condition and the patient's wishes. There are still doctors who practice medicine rather than bureaucratic medicine. We should find them and we should support them. There is an Omicron variant, but it is an extremely mild variant, which is good news on so many levels. If you get Omicron, you're going to get a immunity, a natural immunity that is better than what you get from the shots. And your chances of being hospitalized or even dying from it are very low. This is a good thing. And yes, there are people in positions of authority that we have placed there or are there because of people we have placed in authority that have a different agenda. The good news is we can do something about it. You see, we don't have to be slaves to the Faucis and the Walensky's and the news media and the CDC and the FDA. Once we understand liberty, once we understand that we have the right to fight when they come to take your liberty without due process of law, that we can push back and we can stand, well then, there's a freeing to that understanding, to that knowledge. And it opens you to the possibilities of making different decisions. Decisions that may not be popular, but that's okay. I have the right to be different. So even in all of this doom and gloom and fear-mongering, there is good news. There are good news stories. There is silver linings. There are silver linings if we will look for them. We shouldn't be sitting around waiting for them to be dropped into our lap. We have to actually look for them. But when you look, you can find them. And as crazy as 2021 has been, we're getting to the end of 2021. It has been a crazy year. I've lived as a free person. I've traveled the country. I've met with people. I've shaken hands. I've taken pictures. I've had face-to-face discussions. It was wonderful, glorious. I saw parts of this country I never would have seen if I had not decided to drive rather than fly, because I just don't trust the airlines. I'm really getting tired of the masks. I've met people who are standing, and I've met people who are asking, how do they stand? And it was wonderful. The point is, I lived as a free citizen. And I have met hundreds, and I imagine by this point, thousands of others who are living as free citizens, or at least trying to. So I guess the good news is it's dark. And use whatever metaphor you want, whatever bromide makes you feel better. If we look for the good news and we live as free citizens, then we can teach our children and our grandchildren to live free as well. And while we have a lot of work to do to rein in our employees and government at all levels, we can still do it. It's still possible. We don't need to pick up guns and fight on the battlefield for our rights. We can still do so in the election booth, in the courts, in the streets, and in our homes, in our businesses. Now, if there's one last piece of good news before I wrap up this program, I want to reiterate the biggest cloud over this whole COVID, for those of us who wish to live free, is the apparent isolation. We seem like we're alone, but we're not. There are others that are seeking to live free. And one place you can join to find more of them is go to constitutionscholars.com. It's free to join. You can join your state group or any of the other groups there and find other patriots that are attempting to live free in this wild and crazy world. Now you can find out more about my show and get all the latest podcasts. Just go to AmericaOutloud.com. Under the menu, click Our Shows or Schedules, and you can find more of the Constitution Study.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day.